management level.
That's correct, Madam Chair. He is, Steve Greenwood was the Western Region Administrator. That position is now occupied by Kerry Nelson, and Steve Greenwood is in a, what's called a double fill of that position until the end of the biennium, and then it goes away. He's on a special assignment working on Clean Water Act and Endangered Species Act issues.
So this is like a limited duration position?
Oh, his role, as reflected on this chart, goes away at the end of the biennium.
This is going to take a while to...
That's fine. We're here at your convenience.
That means we have to meet tomorrow, Madam Chair?
And Sunday.
And Sunday also, okay.
And Sunday. You can chair for me if you want to be here Sunday.
I would be happy to do that.
We might show up.
Just might.
Okay.
Oh, I'm looking for another.
I'm not sure that it's the best use of our time right now to go through the org chart with a fine-tooth comb, so why don't you continue on with the presentation that you were
working on. Okay. Well, this does give me an opportunity to start over on this slide.
Thank you.
A little slower pace here.
So.
Okay, so this is how we see our budget when we go to implement it. So let's take air quality, for example. If you look back on the chart that says legislative view of our budget, this duplicates this chart, except it breaks it down more finely to show how we need to implement it. Instead of it just being general, other, and federal funds, it's broken down into many different funds, and most of these are within the other funds category. Most of our fees are dedicated to a particular use, and in fact our federal funds are given to us under grants that have work product agreements with them. So we need to manage each of these funds separately. And in this bar graph, each different color is, it represents a different fund. Now, I could tell you what those funds are if you like, but it does demonstrate the kind of the complexity that we need to go through to manage them. We need to have each of these funds managed as a business unit, and we need to track how they're spent, make sure they're spent on the things that they're authorized to go to, and we need to account for that, and we also need to do forecasts. You don't actually have this slide, but it gives you an idea of what we need to do. And the way we control these, some of the ways we control these are that we have accounting funds that are set up to match the spending restrictions, whether those are in statute or rule. We have a time accounting system developed that will restrict the ineligible charges. Employees do charge time to what they're working on, which isn't always what they're budgeted to work on. And so we need to make sure that we're staying within our limitation, our LAB, legislatively adopted budget limitation on each of these funds. For each fund, we do a quarterly revenue and expenditure forecast. So for each of these colors, we do that type of a forecast to track and make sure that we're on course for budget. And
so you essentially then are rebalancing your budget every quarter? You're checking it to make sure that you're on track with where you were planning to be with receipts and expenditures?
That's correct, Chair Morgan.
Okay.
If I could clarify that, it's not so much a rebalancing as it's like an operating budget where you have the target, which is the legislatively adopted budget, which predicts how much revenue we're going to get and limits how much we can spend. And so then we have an operating budget, so we track our revenues and expenditures as we go through the biennium to ensure that we're within the boundaries that you set, and if we're not getting as many revenues in as we anticipated, then of course we have to back up our spending as well. And so we do track that each quarter. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. And then we do have cash flow management, of course, as any organization does, so that from month to month we need to make sure that we're managing our expenses responsibly, and that we have enough cash on hand to pay payroll and so forth.
Did you have a question?
How do you deal with short-term cash flow problems?
With short-term cash flow problems, we can usually do something that it's easiest to think of as borrowing from one fund to get us by until revenues come in from the appropriate fund, and then we would repay that.
Madam Chair, that leads, of course, to another question that is probably buzzing through your mind also. We had this little problem with this with ODF&W, borrowing from an account that was set up by statute. Could not be used for the purposes with which they were borrowing. I'm assuming that as you do this as an ongoing practice, that you have the statutory authority to do that. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, absolutely. And we're fully aware of difficulties, and we do not wish to duplicate that experience.
Just wanted to be sure.
We don't need to do that very often. We try to plan ending balances in our budget or beginning balances in our budget so that we take care of those cash flow problems and we have enough flexibility as we go through. It doesn't work out that way 100% of the time.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we were to, we have considered breaking down our budget by location in the past for the very reasons that you express. Because it really is hard to see the operational approach with our budget the way it's constructed by program. And if we were to do that, we would also need to break it down by fund within geographic location. And the reason that we would need to do that is because of the restricted funds, and we're really funded by programs. And so if we did that, here's what it would look like. So what we've done is, if you would just put these charts side by side for a moment. This chart that we just looked at, the DEQ view of our budget, and the chart that I have projected up here. And what we would need to do is to take this bar for air quality and break it down like this, this arrow that I'm showing up here. So we break this one bar down into the headquarters portion of air quality, vehicle inspection program, Northwest region, Western region, Eastern region, and the laboratory. And then we would be managing each of these funds, each color, within each of those locations, as well as within the air quality program.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just briefly on the chart that's up on the screen, the large blue area, that what does VIP stand for?
Oh, Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, I apologize. That's Vehicle Inspection Program.
Okay.
We get to speaking our own language sometimes.
Yeah. Thank you.
The yellow portions, the bottom portions of each bar there, are the general fund. And so this is the only fund area where we really have much potential for moving money around. And when we feel like we need to do that, then we would bring that to you in a policy package, as we have in this budget. So I'm going to pause there for just a minute.
Question for you. Madam Chair, what is your estimated, out of your entire budget, what percentage do you spend on management?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, may I clarify the question?
Sure, please.
By management, do you mean the central services, the infrastructure, or indirect type, or do you mean managers?
Okay. I would say rather the former. Your central structure, because your managers will be in the field, will they not?
And
will some of them will actively be engaged in projects and processes and so forth. So I would be more interested in the central.
Okay, Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, we spend about 10% of our operating budget on the indirect functions. It's about 5.8% of our total budget, but the more realistic comparison is to our operating budget.
Okay, so 5% of your total budget.
That's correct.
But 10% of your actual operating budget.
Representative Krupp, that's correct. And the total budget, of course, includes all that flow-through money.
Right.
I think the question that comes to my mind as I step through this is that with having your budget organized in the silos the way that it is, and I think you've done a really good job of showing the complexity of dividing it up any more fully. I would like to have some more information about how in the budgeting process the decision is made on breaking down each of the funds between the regions and the headquarters and the lab. How does that process work? And then the second question I have is, what assurance does this body have that the way that you basically that I guess the question is more like, what latitude does the agency have to move funds around between the different regions?
Madam Chair, I'll take a stab at that, if I may, and let me answer it in two parts. First of all, with regard to the budget, I just want to remind you that the way the current budget structure is in these big silos. It's not like that. So within the budget, the division between headquarters, region, everything else is invisible.
It's not there.
Right.
Yeah.
But as a management operational decision about what positions go to the regions versus stay in headquarters versus go to the lab, if that is part of your question, I can respond to that. And I think we talked about this a little bit the other day about how the agency makes that decision as a matter of policy when the management team sits down and decides how many air people will be in Eastern Region versus how many will be in
That's
South.
That's the question
okay.
that I want, the process or the part of the process that I would like to get some clarity on
okay.
is how the agency decides where to allocate the money in the silos.
Okay. The I will answer that, and then I will finish by answering the other part of your question, which is where is the potential for you to impact that as it currently exists. The way it happens is generally either it can happen a couple of processes. One might be our internal agency strategic planning process, and/or in our budget development process. But and as I think I mentioned the other day, the last time that it happened in a big way was when we actually decentralized the agency. And we all sat down and we said, okay, how many people are going to serve Eastern Region and how many are going to be in Northwest and how many in Western and how many do we need in headquarters to do policy, et cetera. And the short answer is number of sources, complexity of sources, population, it's factors like that, types of program needs, for example, and again I'm familiar with Eastern Region. In air quality, on the west side of the mountains, in particularly in Medford and Portland, the issue is automobiles. And so the kinds of technical staff that you might need on the west side of the mountains to do air quality, you need a bunch of them to do that kind of work. On the east side of the mountains, our air quality issues are really particulate matter based. You know, they're wood stoves and slash burning and, you know, those kinds of factors. So you need the kinds of staff that have expertise in that. permitting, you divide, it's really more a numbers way of dividing people up. How many air sources might there be in Northwest region versus how many in Southwest? And you need X number of engineers and permit writers to address those source needs. So that's how you would sort of generally decide. It's based on the work. And then with regard to the laboratory staff, it's similar. I mean, it's how many samples, whether they're air, water. The laboratory is centrally located, so all programs are represented in the lab. So you have a water quality monitoring group, and you have an air group and all that. So that's pretty straightforward. And then the other headquarters work, the policy and program development work, is again based on an assessment of what do we have to do, how many rules do we have to write, what do we need in terms of our grant-giving body? What do we need for our standard-setting people? That kind of thing. So the program manager groups sit down and have that discussion. And they have it every time we develop a budget request to you all, we revisit this issue. And this is where your role comes in, is in the when the policy packages are, it's two pieces of it. One is your role is, my experience over time has been, your role with the base budget is probably less clear than it is with the packages. Because historically, and different legislatures have dealt with the base budget in different ways. I remember when Representative Minnis was in the legislature, Mr. Minnis, a few biennia ago, he was very interested in the base budget, and there was a lot of discussion and a lot of analysis about it. But you do definitely get involved in the packages, because in those packages, in their budget book, there are specific positions identified that are requested in there. And oftentimes, they are specified geographically as to where they're located or lab or whatever. And if they aren't for some reason, they ought to be. I mean, the agency can provide that information, and or you can change that. I mean, you can say, well, we agree you might need these people, but we don't want them there, or we don't want them doing this. We think you should have them over here doing this. So you would definitely get involved in that. So that is, I hope, somewhat of an explanation.
Representative Hansen.
Okay. Thank you. If the personnel decisions are based on where the workload is, does the revenue for the fees and the other funds, does that pretty closely track to, is there a pretty close relationship between where the fees are generated and where the workload is and also where the personnel are?
Relatively closely. I mean, there are exceptions to that, and I think fee payers would argue that intensely urban areas to a certain degree subsidize more rural areas in terms of the work. I mean, Eastern Oregon's a good example, because you can't factor the staff you need out there without considering the distance that it is to do stuff. I mean, we don't do fee permit work on a direct one-to-one correlation. I mean, people pay fees, for example, into the wastewater permitting program that supports the entire wastewater permitting structure. But the staff, for example, the Pendleton staff, are only going to be working on the wastewater permits that are in their geographic area. And so they're funded by wastewater permitting fees, and they're only doing wastewater permitting work. In that case, there's definitely a one-to-one correlation. But if for some reason we've had to have another permit writer out there that's maybe one more permit writer than the number of sources would have in a one-to-one correlation, you couldn't maybe necessarily draw an exact one-to-one correlation. There might be some other degrees of complexity that enter into it. Or if there's a special permit that had some unique kind of study associated with it that the agency had to devote some extra resource to. It was paid for out of the wastewater permitting program, but it might not normally be something that would affect that region. So there is a little bit of an anomaly, a little bit of subsidy, and not always a one-to-one correlation, but it's pretty close.
The,
Going back to how the budget money is allocated over the regions and the headquarters and the lab, what role do the regional managers play in the budget process? Do they have an active role in deciding how the money's allocated to the regions?
There's two levels, and before me, there are what we call section managers, and they are programmatic. So there are, let's take air. There are air managers, and that's below, let me just be sure we're tracking. This, I'm talking about the manager level below this level right now first. Okay below this level. There's 57 of those, and those are organized for the most part, and there's agency management ones as well, but there are a group of air ones, a group of water ones, a group of waste ones, and those managers collectively represent all aspects of that program. They include the regional air managers, they include the headquarters air managers, they include the lab air managers. That's the group that I was describing a minute ago, where they initially get together and they talk about what are the budgetary needs for the entire air program. What do we need to do in this program? Do we need to fund more field positions? Do we need more enforcement? Do we need more rule writing? What do we need? And they go through that process, and the decisions about what's going to be submitted as a budget request come out of that, and they meet on an ongoing basis, and they discuss policy issues and everything else. So that will happen. Let's say we're talking budget development right now. They'll make those recommendations. That set of recommendations will come up to this level, this group of people, who also meet regularly with me. And they will have, a group will come up from the air program side, from the water program side, who's at the same kind of meeting, regional, headquarters, everybody, and from the waste side. And those will come up to this group of people, and we collectively will evaluate that and make a decision about what is going to be presented in our budget request to DAS, and so that, and to the governor. So everybody is actively involved in that aspect of it. And I'll just stop there and see if that answers your question. And if that doesn't, then...
I think it does. I guess what I'm curious about is how much what the regional manager's role is in the actual allocation of funds into the region. But what I hear you say is that it is kind of a combination of the department managers and the regional managers coming to some kind of an agreement.
Madam Chair, that's correct. Now, let me take that one step further to see if I can address your specific point you just made in terms of allocation. I was really talking about budget development. And it's interesting because I was just having this conversation with Helen in the car the other day going home. In implementation of all of this, it's basically a matrix management structure, as is obvious from looking at all of this. What will happen is this is the way that it is designed to work, whether it is a budget decision or a policy decision. It is designed that the program managers, the level under this one, are like air. You got a bunch of budget decisions to make, you got a bunch of policy decisions to make, you get together and work it out. And if they as air managers collectively can work it out, terrific. You know, they've all agreed, and the decision's made, program moves ahead, and obviously that their senior management is informed, but they're informed with the idea that the on-the-ground program managers are in agreement, okay. Let's say they don't agree. Then the way the system is designed to work on a budget issue or a policy issue is that decision upon which they can't agree gets bumped up to this level. So let's say the air managers get together and there's some budget issue, since we're talking budget, that they can't agree on. And they bump it up to, and any whoever's unhappy, whether it's a regional person or a headquarters person, can bump it up to their senior representative on the team and say, the team wants to do this, but we don't agree, or we don't all agree, or whatever. So any one of these senior managers here can bring the issue to the table. So the way it's designed to work is, let's say it's an air problem. then the group, the little subgroup that would need to get together to solve it is the AIR headquarters administrator, Andy Ginsberg, and the three regional administrators shown here, Hammond, Nelson, and Mullane. So the three regions and the headquarters, they say, okay, the AIR manager team couldn't agree on this. We need to get together, and we need to resolve it as the senior management team. Hopefully, they'd be able to do that. If they can't, then it comes to me, and I resolve it. So that's the way the system is designed to work. In response to Representative Krupp's question earlier about where some of the problems have been in the system, and I answered the issue of who's in charge, my observation of what has occurred over time, which I intend to fix, is that when the program manager teams down here don't agree and it gets bumped up to this senior manager team level, that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes they have not either dealt with the problem or whatever they haven't done, but it hasn't gotten resolved. And so by default, in some cases, the headquarters person is just making the decision. And then the people who don't like it aren't happy, and so we don't have happy campers. So my goal is to go back to, is to make them do what, I was there when that agency decentralized, and I know how this is supposed to work, and I'm gonna force them to go back and do it the way it's supposed to work. Because it can work, and it used to work, and I think that over the past few years, it's been allowed not to work, and so it's not working as well as it could right now. But I don't think, I feel this pretty strongly, I don't think the decentralized structure is the fault of that. I think it's a leadership issue.
Thank you. I think we're ready to take another chew at this.
Okay. The machine is kind of going to sleep here for a minute.
Resting?
It's resting. We'll move forward in a moment.
Maybe you can transition to what we're...
Okay, that would be a good idea. I was just going to point out the next step. So I'll try to do it on this slide and see what happens. So that was a little frustrating. Let me go back for a minute. Okay, so the next step, if we were to construct the budget not only by program and fund but by region, would be that we would, for instance, if we...
No. You may have to talk to it.
I'm not holding my mouth right, I guess. We would need to, I'm not going to touch that pad again. We would need to take the, let's take, say, in the air quality column, and if we see, if you look at the western region bar there that's kind of in the middle, we would take the western region budget from each of the programs and just add those together.
If you were going to create a western region.
Okay. Right. And then on your next slide, this is what it would look like.
Okay. I see what you're doing.
Just, I'm sorry about all that flipping back and forth here. Sometimes this computer has a mind of its own. And that is...
And Madam Chair, if I
so
may...
So instead of being here for 2 weeks, we'd be here for six or eight weeks.
I just wanted to connect the dots to the earlier discussion. What I presented to you as a leadership dilemma and not a fault of the structure, one might remedy the leadership dilemma by doing this, by not forcing people to make a decision as a group of senior managers, by saying, okay, we'll just give you your own, go off and do it, and you don't have to discuss it with anybody. I mean, that's a management choice. I don't know that that would be the first place I would go for all the reasons we've talked about and the point you just made about being here for another 2 weeks. I mean, you can see already how complex our budget is. And we've had lots of conversations about whether doing something like this makes that any better or makes it any worse. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would like to say that structuring the budget like this at the construction stage is more effort, although not significantly more effort, when we're putting the budget together. The place where it gets really complex and does require more effort to manage is when we're implementing the budget. And we're going through each quarter and making our forecasts and tracking our expenditures by each of these funds, when we then need to track each of these funds within each of these geographic locations, that's when it would take more resources to do. Now, when you wouldn't have to see the budget broken down to this level of fund detail. You could still see it by the headquarters, general, other, and federal. The fact is that we would need to be implementing the budget as you see here on this slide throughout the biennium. So that's where the additional complexity comes in for us.
So in reality, the budget ends up looking like this, but when you present it to us, it looks like this. Is that a fair statement?
It looks like this.
Well, you see, wait a minute.
Yeah, it does look like this, but...
Right.
But what I'm saying is that by the time all of the decisions have been made internally about how to allocate the resources, you do have it broken down by fund, by region.
Yeah, we kind of do.
I think we need to keep the distinction between budget decisions and management decisions. I mean, we have... as an organization, as you can see reflected on here, we know where everybody is by region and headquarters and everything else. So you're absolutely correct. We certainly do have an awareness of program broken down that way, program activity broken down that way. But the budget is still managed like this. I mean, it's managed. There's an air budget, and there's a water budget, and there's a waste budget, and... These people are all reflected in it. I don't know. I'm not making it any more clear. I can tell.
Can I give it a shot?
Yeah, give it a shot. And maybe Mr. Rocco can
and
help.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we don't currently break each fund down by region. We could, as in this slide here. And then when you see the budget, it wouldn't have to look like this. You wouldn't have to see every detail of every fund like this. It could look like this. So instead of the air, water, waste silos that you see now, you would see something more like this.
Madam Chair, I think one way of viewing this is that you could possibly see the budget in these types of silos, yes, rather than those types of silos. Those are program silos. These are more of a geographic silo. And right now, the legislature has no ability to determine how much is in headquarters versus how much is in Eastern Region. And I think that's the issue that the chair is trying to get at.
Right. Madam Chair, yes, I would agree with that. What I have projected up here is the breakdown by region with just the general, other, and federal fund breakdown. So this would have headquarters as well as Northwest Region and Eastern Region. I know that's hard to see, and you don't have this slide in your packet. I was afraid I was getting too many different views of the same thing. But you could look at it like that, too.
I mean, Madam Chair, the complexity, I mean, it really depends on what the information is that you want. Because it, and because I'm trying to sort of figure out where you're going with your line of questioning, if it's the fact, and I think Representative Hansen was alluding to this, that you want to know how much of the water fees are being spent in what region, or how much of the air fees, or how much of whatever it is, that's where you get into the kind of complex accounting that Helen was referring to that takes managing all 127 cost centers in that, distributing that information in that way. It's not to say it can't be done, but as you can see, it's pretty complex. I mean, right now we have permit fees in air, and they're budgeted for X number of FTE, and we can and have broken out those FTE by where they are. And you can attach costs to those. I mean, so it can, it physically can be done. It's just the level of complexity that one really wants and or needs to manage in terms of the budget.
Then how do we know that you haven't chosen to hold a bunch of positions vacant in the Western region, for example, and, you know, they're in your budget, we okayed you to spend that money, but the for whatever reason, the agency chose to hold those positions vacant and put the money into some other region or headquarters?
Madam Chair, unless you had some kind of regular reporting during the interim on that sort of thing, there really isn't any reason that you would know about those ongoing management decisions in a given biennium, unless you asked the agency to report on it periodically.
Okay. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But along those lines, Madam Chair, we have benchmarks and we have performance goals and specific performance objectives. And if the department were fudging on moving funds around, that would reflect in their ability to deliver on those performance objectives. Because I presume that if the performance objectives are reasonable, that it really does cost $2 million, for example, to deliver results in this area, and they deliver those results, they can't do it without the adequate funding.
And Madam Chair, I guess I would just raise, since we're on this, and this committee has good discussions, I think, ask good questions. I mean, to me, it comes to a fundamental question of what does the legislator want to pay the senior managers at our agencies to do? I mean, my understanding of my role as a director is to work with my management team to decide, for example, if there's some kind of huge, let's say we had some kind of natural disaster in southwestern Oregon that required a whole bunch of environmental work, and we had to shove a bunch of people down there to do it, and therefore they couldn't do their work in another region or another area, or whatever the scenario might be. I mean, I feel that that's part of my responsibility as a director of an agency to do that, and to do it within the law, and to not use funds that are supposed to be used for one thing and move them over to somewhere else unless I come and ask somebody permission to do that, if permission is needed. So we're happy to report and communicate information to this body in any way that you want it. And at the same time, I would just ask that you consider what you want back in terms of the expectation of the managers to make decisions on a daily basis and manage workload and manage personnel.
Well, and I don't want to set up the expectation here that we're going to require you to report in on every single thing. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on here.
Okay.
And get a handle on what the latitude is on fund shifting, because it's something that wasn't, it was a question that came to me as I was working my way through the data about what the process was and what the sideboards were on how it could happen. And it's clear to me that there's really clear sideboards on fund shifting as the funding source defines the use of the fund, but it's not clear to me, but you've brought a lot more clarity to it, about how the decisions are made within the management structure of the agency about how to allocate the funds given the restrictions on what they can be used for.
Good. I'm glad we did that.
Now, and one more thing that I'm looking at, as I look at this graph here, what jumps out real obviously is that the amount of money that's spent in each of the silos at headquarters is substantially more than what's spent out in the regional offices. Can you talk to us about what's going on there?
Madam Chair, I think that is probably the most noticeable in the waste management programs, right?
Well, they all have that. You know, like even air quality, the headquarters budget in relation to the other budgets is, you know, the bar's higher, except for the vehicle inspection program, which is kind of off to the side.
Could I?
Sure.
Madam Chair, I want to tell you one thing about these charts. Since we don't break our budget down this way, we had to take kind of a shortcut in order to do it for this demonstration, and we did it purely on the number of FTE in each location. So some things like contract spending are very likely in the headquarters location where it might, in these charts, where it might really be taking place out in the regions. And if we were really developing a budget this way, we, of course, would distribute those costs. So that's probably one factor here that plays into there. I'm not trying to represent that that's the only one.
And the other point I would make, Madam Chair, is to keep in mind, roughly, we are, of our entire workforce, we have 50% in our, or less, in our headquarters. Because remember, this is, the headquarters bar here is actually stacked up against three regions cumulative. So when we're talking about being decentralized, this represents all the policy and program development work that's done in headquarters, and then each of these three are all the rest of the field folks. So cumulatively, there are as many out in the field or more as there are in headquarters, but you have to consider all three regions at the same time. So Northwest plus Western plus Eastern.
So, and when you do that 50-50 split, you're also including the agency management folks in the headquarters?
Yes.
That was my list. Okay. Any more questions? No?
Yeah.
Right. Thank you very much. This is the end of what we had for our discussion on the budget structure, and so then we would move into the discussion on indirect functions.
Have this already?
No. It's right here.
Representative Nolan, I think you might be interested that we have copies of some of the MAOs that we talked about yesterday.
Actually, don't need either one for this.
Your release, if you would like to.
Thank you, Holly.
I don't need me either for that matter.
Oh, yes.
Thanks. Any colors can make
Madam Chair and members of the committee, and again for the record, my name is Helen Lottridge. I'm the administrator of the Management Services Division at DEQ. The purpose of this discussion is to lay out how our central services are paid for through our indirect and how that works, the process for getting there, basically. So on this first slide, you saw a similar pie chart when we were giving the agency management overview. And this is a little bit more detailed, and it's by percentages of the total agency management budget. And so this is how the budget is broken down. And this shows everything that's in the agency management budget, except for two small things. One is an amount of general fund. It's the only general fund that we have in the agency management budget. It's $247,563. That pays for a direct allocation of our share of the expenses of running the governor's office and the legislature. And then we have a small amount of bond management expenses, $83,104. Which are paid for from other sources. Generally, we're able to do bond management out of the bond proceeds.
And what are those for?
It's for management of our bond sales and our debt service, and you're going to hear a lot more about that in a few moments.
Okay.
When we go into the bond presentation. In this chart, I've also, I should say Jim Royce, our budget manager, has broken down our information management functions so that we break out how much of the information management we do by contract, and also how much of it is for vendor maintenance of hardware and software that we have. So that's the breakout of the agency management portion of the agency. Now, this is all funded, except for the two small amounts that I gave you, this is all funded by indirect, what we call indirect. Now, going to the next slide, I just wanted to talk about indirect a little bit. Every single budget anywhere accounts somehow for indirect costs. And there are lots of methods to do this in both the private and public sectors, how these indirect costs show up in the budget. Two common methods are to charge directly to business units for these central or indirect costs, and secondly, to figure out a share for each budget unit to put in the pool for these central services and have an agency management budget unit. The principal benefit of using number two, which we do, is that then the agency management costs are quite visible in the budget. Pause there for just a moment. So how do we distribute those shares equitably among the programs? We do it basically by the size of the staff in each business unit at DEQ. And the reason that we choose to do it by the labor costs is because most of our indirect services are related to supporting staff. And the other reason that we do it by the direct labor cost is because having a single method of deciding an indirect share for the whole agency, it makes it more simple and it costs less to administer. There are lots of baselines that could be used. For instance, there are some organizations that take a share that is based on the entire cost of a business unit. Let me go into an example here. On the second bullet here, we say that we apply a percentage to the business unit's direct labor costs. So let's use air quality as an example again. The way we do it at DEQ is that in air quality, a certain amount of their budget is designated for direct labor or personal services costs. And what we do is determine a percentage to apply against the direct labor costs for each business unit, and that becomes an amount equivalent to that becomes that unit's share of the central pool for paying for these indirect functions. And that amount of revenue is moved from air quality into the agency management budget as indirect revenue. Okay.
So the problem then becomes what you're doing then is just taking a piece out of the budget. So you can't say that you're directly taking a piece out of federal funds or other funds or lottery funds. You're just taking a piece.
Madam Chair, we actually take the same size of piece out of each of those funds that are paid toward direct labor.
Oh, okay. So regardless, is it in proportion to the amount of the fund that's, like, this is getting really twisted here. For example, the air quality budget. You've got, you know, it's made up of general fund, other fund, and federal fund. Mm-hmm. But the general fund chunk and the federal fund chunk are kind of the same size. The other fund is much, much bigger. So do you take out a bigger percentage of other funds than general or federal, or do you take out the same size piece?
Short answer is that, yes, we take a bigger chunk if the fund is bigger. Let me try a simplified example. Let's take a person in the air quality program, and let's assume that The direct labor costs for that person are $100. If 25% of that person's salary is paid by general funds, and 25% is paid by federal funds, and 50% is paid by other funds, those are the proportions that will go into agency management.
Okay. That answers my question.
But Madam Chair, if I might, the if in air quality all of the federal funds are used for non-personal service items, there would be no indirect charge against the federal funds. It would all come from other, it's only towards personal service expenditures. So it doesn't necessarily depend on the size of the funding in each of the in each of those silos. It depends on how much of each fund source is going towards personal service costs.
So when what happens then when you've got dedicated funding sources, can you use those to offset indirect costs?
Yes, Madam Chair, we can.
As long, Madam Chair, as long as those direct funding sources are being expended on personal services, i.e. labor. Because that's indirect derives, as Helen's example of it, that's why she used an individual employee, because that's the factor that, from which indirect is computed, not for contract dollars or pass-through or any of that stuff.
Okay.
Okay, so when all of those contributions or shares are moved into the, into agency budget, agency management, and totaled up, then that total is the agency management budget.
Say that again.
That pie chart.
Say
okay.
That again.
When all of those shares are combined, they're put into agency management.
That makes
you add those
budget.
All up, and this is what it adds up to.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So, how do we decide how much of a share, how do we decide how much needs to come into agency management? Well, here's how it works. At the start of our agency request budget development, we develop a provisional indirect rate. Now, the indirect rate...
I don't know how you keep all this straight.
Madam Chair, I just have to say here
quite
that, this
simple,
is,
really.
That this is my least favorite topic to try and explain to anybody. I was just commenting to Stephanie the other day that I have never finished an explanation of indirect and felt like I was successful.
And Madam Chair, that's one of the reasons why we're having Helen do this.
We want to give her one more chance.
Well, at least it's not my birthday.
Let us know if you need a drink of water.
Okay, or something. Okay, so at the beginning of the budget, we develop what we think is going to be the right indirect rate to charge to the direct labor budgets of each program. And the way we do that is when we get to the point of the current service level budget, we figure out what the indirect rate would be if that's where we stayed. And this is the formula that you see here. We take the program direct labor current service level budget, and this is only the direct labor portion of their budget, and we divide that into the agency management total current service level budget.
So you end up with a percentage, basically.
That's right. And for the budget that you have in front of you, that provisional indirect rate is 19.2%. Yes.
Why are the allocation for the governor's office and the management of the bond sale separate from the formula?
They're separate from the formula because those two things are not paid through from indirect revenues. We're not allowed to use indirect revenues to pay for the governor's office and the legislature.
And it, why is that?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm going to check and see if either Lisa or Jim Royce know the answer to that question. Why don't you come on up to the table? Madam Chair, I'm asking Jim Royce to join us at the table. Jim is our budget manager.
Welcome, I think.
For the record, my name is Jim Royce. I'm the budget manager at DEQ. Madam Chair, the federal government, when we receive grants from them, require us to not only fairly distribute the costs to all funding sources, our general, other, and federal funds, but they also specifically prohibit us from using any federal grant funds for funding the governor's office or the state legislature. And as a result of collecting indirect from the federal funds, we cannot use the pool of indirect money in any way to fund the legislature or the governor's office. In regards to the bond fund, because the bonds do not benefit all of the programs, the bonds primarily benefit the SRF program in the water quality program and the orphan site program in cleanup, we do not allocate those costs to all the programs. It wouldn't be fair to the air quality program to have to pay for a part of that. So it is budgeted separately.
Okay. Questions? Representative Hayden, did you have a question?
Okay. So after establishing that provisional indirect rate, we went ahead and constructed the rest of the budget, including the option packages. And we used that provisional indirect rate as an assumption in the rest of the budget construction. Now, when all of the legislative decisions are final, we can see whether we were accurate or not on our provisional indirect rate. And we can compare the legislatively approved program budgets with the agency management budget and rebalance the indirect rate if needed. I'm ready to move off of this slide, if you are. This next slide, and I believe that you have, you have full-size slides of these, I think. This shows how revenues flow through DEQ, and I'm just hoping to clarify a little bit. So revenues, the pie chart on the upper left is our total revenue coming into the agency. So that's our whole, that's everything we get coming into the agency. And the pie chart directly to the right of that is our non-limited budget, which is primarily the state revolving fund, the flow through to communities. And then you see the debt service in the small pie chart just below that. So those are kept outside the box, so to speak, and the box being our operating budget.
Wow, this is really a great diagram.
Thank you. thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
It just shows the depths to which you as a chair have sunk if you get excited about a diagram and an economic model. It's the transformation is nearly complete.
Okay, well, so inside the box is the operating budget, and you can see that money flows. We keep using air quality as an example, so let's keep on with that. So money flows down into air quality, and you see the pie chart there for air, and that their budget is $44,477,113. And in our budget, they are flowing $5,715,000 into the agency management budget out of their revenues. That's now the $44 million that's shown there does not include that indirect total. That's their budget after they shift those monies into agency management. And so we do that with each program, and then you come over to the agency management budget, and the $18,222,000, there is the total agency management budget. Now, if I go back to that air quality example once again, that $5 million is derived from, we would take the part of that $44 million air quality budget that is for direct labor, and we would apply the provisional indirect rate to that, and that then applied an amount, produced an amount of $5.7 million, and that amount of revenues was moved into the agency management budget in our request. And that
excellent visual representation. It's like the 40,000 foot view that it's really clear.
Chair Morgan, thank you very much. I credit Jim Roys with producing this graph at my request, and I'm sure he was cursing me every step of the way because it wasn't easy. That agency management budget, that $18 million, now that is the number that is 10% of our operating budget. Okay. And now, on the last slide, I just wanted to summarize the budget process for agency management because this truly is very confusing. If there's an easier way, I would sure like to move to it. But at any rate, just to review, in the first box there in this flowchart, at current service level, we calculate the provisional indirect rate for budget construction. Now, one might ask, why do we even bother with calculating an indirect rate at this point? Why don't we just wait till the very end? Well, the reason is so that the programs can have some tool with which to estimate what their contribution is going to be to the indirect functions.
Well, it would seem problematic to try to firm up the spending knowing that some of it was going to go away but not how much of it was going to go away.
Chair Morgan, that's exactly right. And so then the next step in our budget process is that we determine the agency central service needs and, going to the third box, we construct the rest of the DEQ budget, including the program option packages, using the provisional rate. We bring our budget to you. And so then we go on to the fourth box, and you make decisions on our budget and on our packages, and then we're able to see whether our provisional indirect rate was accurate or not. And if it is not, we have an opportunity to rebalance the indirect rate.
Makes sense.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we have been discussing with Mr. Rocco some ways that this might be better managed for your purposes and ours during the legislative process, and so I don't know where we're going to end up on that, but I think he has some ideas to improve.
Questions or comments on indirect costs? No, I think we're actually going to get done.
Okay. Then, Madam Chair, this will then move us into the routine world of...
Maybe it suggests, Madam Chair, that instead of finding us for not being here, you should fine us for being here in order to keep the attendance low and move the agenda.
Yeah. I'll take it under consideration.
So we'll move then into the bond financing portion of today's agenda, and I'm going to ask Jim Roys, our budget manager, to come back here and he's going to actually do this discussion.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record again, I'm Jim Roys, budget manager at DEQ, and I come here today to hopefully follow in Helen's footsteps in successfully explaining, as she said, a very arcane and difficult at times issue to discuss, and that is bonds and debt service. And the first question that we often get asked is, why do we sell bonds? As you can see from this chart, bonds are primarily used to fund large capital projects. They allow you to essentially buy the project early and pay for it on time, being over the next 15 to 20 years. We generally use bonds for capital improvements that last longer than the bond term. And finally, the payments for bonds get made over the life of the project, principally by the beneficiaries of the investment. So when we talk about our state revolving fund for clean water projects, it is primarily the people that are using the sewage treatment facility that will be paying for those, the debt service on those bonds in future years. The next slide provides a brief of the different types of bond instruments that we use in the state of Oregon. I'm not going to go through this entire chart, but I do want to highlight that the instruments that we show here are shown in order of increasing cost. We talk about general obligation bonds. Those are the most widely used bonds in the DEQ program. Lottery revenue bonds, which are new to us, but we do have our Clean Water SRF package is proposed on lottery revenue bonds. And then revenue bonds, certificates of participation, and finally taxable bonds, which of course require an additional premium as far as interest rate costs. And if there aren't any other questions or you feel you need any other information on this chart, I'd like to go ahead and move on. This was just provided for information.
Please proceed.
I'm going to start by talking about one of the two major uses of bond proceeds in the DEQ agency, and the first is the Clean Water State Revolving Fund program. This program provides loans to communities to both plan and ultimately build clean water projects. The bond proceeds are used to match federal funds at a match rate of one state dollar for every $5, so we leverage the use of the bond proceeds. We are currently projecting between $30 million and $45 million per biennium of federal revenues being available, and we've looked at the mid-range of that to set the amount of bonds that we sell. We would need essentially an $8 million bond sale to provide match for $40 million of federal capitalization grants. There's some further detail on the sheet you've been handed out. I would like to note on there that we currently have demand for loans totaling $250 million. 115 projects from 77 different communities around the state of Oregon. In addition to the loans that we...
Madam Chair?
I'm sorry, yes.
That doesn't seem very much. Does that cover the need? Are all the communities operating with adequate water supplies? And that's just the last of it, or what? Or is that the first of it? $250 million statewide to provide clean water, or is everybody else in compliance?
Representative Hayden, I don't know the answer to that question. I do know that we have, that this current demand is for communities that have come to the agency requesting loans or in the early process of requesting loans, and I'm not sure that we know exactly how much demand there is. Over time, the demand may well increase as other communities, as they grow, develop the need for larger clean water, i.e. sewage treatment plants, and would come into the program.
Well, I see this as good news, you know, if that's all the need there is, Madam Chair. Thank you. Good.
Madam Chair, are there any other questions on this slide?
I don't think so.
We currently have in our budget two packages that are related to the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. They're noted in the first bullet on this slide. We are requesting a $9.1 million lottery revenue bond. The debt service in the current biennium for that bond is $305,000. It will roll up, however, to $1.84 million per biennium, and that will go for the next 14 years. What that bond buys us, in essence, is $48 million of revenues that will go into the SRF revolving fund, and also it funds concurrently. We show that in the non-limited portion of our budget, and that's why you see these packages are labeled Package 520, which is the non-limited portion of the budget. I would like to note that $48 million, that is the sum of the $8 million of match and $40 million of federal funds. We are required to maintain a reserve because these are lottery revenue bonds. I won't go into the arcane reasons for that, but we are required to maintain a reserve for future debt service. And in fact, these bonds are 15-year repayment schedules. The reserve is used in our case to pay the last year of debt service, and that's why we'll see this $1.84 million per biennium for the next seven biennium when there won't be a 15th year payment. The next slide shows you the cumulative history of state revolving fund proceeds. The blue in this chart is a cumulative total of state match, and the red in the chart is the cumulative total of federal capitalization grants that we have received to date, plus what we project for the 01-03 biennium based on the governor's budget.
So the program began in the 91-93 biennium?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, let me clarify that, if I may. It used to be called the Construction Grants Program. It was a grant program. In 91-93, the federal government switched it to a loan program.
Okay.
As you can see from this chart, the federal capitalization grants allow us to provide considerable leverage on our state spending, such that every dollar that we provide in bonds, we are able to make $6 worth of loans.
And all of these bonds were issued on a 20-year payback?
The bonds that were issued for under general obligation bonds, which are all of them that you see on here with the exception of the 01-03 governor's budget, were all made on 20-year repayment schedules. Okay. The 01-03 governor's budget, the bond that is sold there, as I explained in the prior slide, would be on a 15-year repayment because it's a lottery revenue bond.
And then the match in the 01-03 recommendation comes from lottery funds. The match in the previous years came from general fund?
In the periods between the 91-93 biennium and the 97-99 biennium, they were actually provided by a mixture of lottery funds and general fund. In developing the 99-01 budget, the decision was made to remove all of the lottery support for debt service and replace it with general fund.
Say that again?
We had, for example, we may have had $5 million of lottery debt service across both this source and our orphan site debt service, and the decision was made during the 99-01 biennium to essentially clean up the presentation of debt service by not showing any lottery debt service to pay for these bonds, but to rather replace that lottery with general fund.
So what we're being asked to do this time is a departure from what was the previous biennium's policy.
Madam Chair, that is correct. Also, we are issuing are proposing to issue this time a lottery revenue bond, which is different than a general obligation bond for which we in the past used lottery revenues. The general obligation bond has the full faith and credit of the state of Oregon behind it. The lottery revenue bonds are essentially coupled to our lottery revenues and do not have that same level of backing. As a result, the bond sale and the debt service will probably cost us some incremental additional interest on the bonds that we sell.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
I happen to sit on the General Government Committee, which is hearing the Treasury's budget, and the State Treasurer is very concerned that we're almost tapped out on lottery bonds. I think that's pretty close to a dead horse, lottery bonding for the next 5 to 10 years. You think I'm close to being correct?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I think the governor's budget, proposed budget, did do that, took away or used up most of the lottery bond capacity based on the forecasts that were available when the governor's budget was developed. And I think since then there's been increases in lottery revenue forecasts, which may allow for a slight amount of additional bonding capacity, but I think you're absolutely right that it's with the in the governor's proposed budget, it uses up most of that capacity.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if there aren't any other questions on this slide, I'd like to move on to the next one.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, the
Senator Ferriola.
I think it benefits us just to put that governor's proposal in perspective. It's about $200 million in lottery bonding authority that the governor proposes. Most, if not all of that, is for infrastructure development in rural and distressed communities. Most of it, if not all of it, is for water, wastewater treatment facilities. So when we're looking at using that lottery capacity up, it follows at least two legislative sessions of direction from this body. One would be focus on urban and rural distressed communities and focus on infrastructure grants and make it, you know, we did that in the 96-97 legislative session, and in the 99 legislative assembly we did shift significant dollars toward the infrastructure objectives by committing lottery dollars there. So I think this is a continuation of that kind of thing. The concern is that we use up, at least in the governor's proposal, all of the remaining capacity, or most of it. I think that was your concern.
Madam Chair, Senator, my thought was, I wasn't unduly concerned about it, but my thought was that all the capacity has, all or near all the capacity had been used up. And I didn't realize, and are you saying that they are really talking about the same dollars? The dollars the governor used, which almost used up the capacity, are the same dollars that they are talking about?
Madam Chairman, partly the same, but partly these bonds would be leveraging federal dollars as well. I mean, the idea is that we're using scarce state resources to leverage relatively abundant federal resources.
Thank you.
And I think that all of us have had experiences in our district where these funding sources have become very important to these projects becoming real. The cost of putting these kinds of facilities on the ground is staggering in relation to the resources that are available in a lot of the communities. So these programs are important. Please proceed.
The next slide, we are discussing the wastewater bond and debt service forecast. This is not a cumulative slide, so we need to reorient our thinking around that. It shows the actual bond sales that we have held in the past for prior biennia, in each of the biennia, and also what we project going out into the future. Those are the green bars, and we are projecting a need for an $8 million per biennium sale for the state revolving fund match component. The blue chart simply shows you the growing amount of debt service that we are forecasting based on our current bond sales that have already occurred plus the forecasted bond sales out into the future. We would note that in the 03-05 biennium, the biennial debt service at that point for the first time will exceed that biennium's bond sale amount. That is, we will get $8 million of bond proceeds and will pay something more than $8 million in debt service that biennium. We do need to recognize that that $8 million is representative of the bonds that we have sold for the prior six biennia, however. And I would like to now move on to the orphan site cleanup program and the use of bonds and debt service in that area. In the orphan site program, as you've heard during previous program presentations, we use these bond proceeds to fund cleanup sites where there is no identified responsible party, or the responsible parties are unwilling or unable to pay for the cleanup. The bonds in this program are the primary source of funds to clean up these sites. Historically, I've added this little factoid. Historically, we have recovered approximately 21% of cleanup costs on orphan sites. The driver on that has been a small number of fairly large collections, such as on McCormick and Baxter. And we don't know that that will continue into the future, that we'll be able to rely on that level of cleanup cost recovery on our future orphan sites.
Have you estimated the bonding necessary to cover the Portland Harbor issue? Is that figured into this?
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Paul Sliman, the cleanup division administrator, to come forward and address that issue.
Is that the Superfund listing that you're referring to?
Yes. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Sliman. Your question was, have we included potential orphan sites from Portland Harbor in this estimate? Is that correct? We estimate that there'll be two additional orphan sites from Portland Harbor in this upcoming biennium. We have included them in this estimate. There's always the possibility that there may be more than two, that we retain the flexibility so that we could address those or convince responsible parties to take action at those other sites that may crop up in Portland Harbor.
Please proceed.
On the next slide, I'd like to discuss the, again, we have packages in our budget for the orphan site program. There are three policy packages that are required to be passed to make the funding proceed and to allow us to actually spend the bond proceeds. That is package 133, which is part of our limited budget and allows us to actually spend the proceeds on doing cleanup work. And then packages 520, which is a small amount of non-limited to cover debt service issuance costs, bond proceeds and the issuance costs. And then package 560 is the actual debt service for the bond sale. Here we would be issuing $8 million of general obligation bonds. The 0103 debt service for that is $282,405 to be paid for on other funds. We have some small amount of other fund balances remaining that we can use for debt service, and we have provided those for this budget. However, the debt service would roll up to approximately $1.35 million per biennium for the next 10 biennia. And future debt service funding has not been identified for this bond sale.
See us getting into a vicious bond sales cycle here.
Vicious, Madam Chair?
Yes. It's going to be like a dog chasing its tail. Okay. questions, comments, other than my sarcastic ones, Senator Ferrioli?
Well, I think there's a lot of sources for bond servicing. Part of those will undoubtedly come from recoveries from landowners. Some, this is a relatively new approach in Oregon, has been used elsewhere, will come from special taxing districts, either at the municipal level or possibly a special district inside a municipal boundary, where landowners participate in order to be involved in the direction of the cleanup activities. So I guess the trade-off landowners may be asked to participate in is a special taxing district to help reduce the costs or cover the cost of debt service, participation in a program that offers a low-cost bonding access, and accessibility to the process that sets the direction and timing and sequencing of the cleanup. Sort of a meeting of minds about how does a landowner meet their own obligations for a cleanup under a Superfund site. Because it's not a public obligation, it's the landowner obligation. If it can't be discharged by the landowner, it defaults to the public. But the fact is that most of the properties in the Portland Harbor are highly valuable, potentially more valuable in the future when they're cleaned up, sites. And if there's a mechanism for cleaning them up that doesn't bankrupt the landowner, that's by far preferable to the alternative, which is that the landowner tosses you the keys and says, have a nice day, and lets the state clean it up. So part of the potential debt service, even though it can't be identified now because we cannot obligate a future legislature, if we create these debts, we'll have to enter into some negotiations and find some solutions that involve landowners to pay them off in the future. But I think that's possible in a case like Portland, where you've got high-value land and the utility's clearly going to be preserved by the cleanup.
I agree with your comments. We have about 14 minutes here.
We're coming to the end. The next slide is a view of the cumulative orphan site bond proceed issuance, similar to what we showed with the SRF program, with the addition of the proposed $8 million bond sale in the 2001-03 biennium. As you can see, we have issued something more than $40 million of orphan site bonds over the life of the program. Paul Slyman just reminded me that we will have issued, Madam Chair, to correct the record, we will have issued $40 million worth of bond proceeds, assuming that the policy package is approved and we proceed with an $8 million bond sale, the 2001-03 biennium.
Always assume the close, ma'am, when you're selling.
We remember one of the dictums in selling is that you're not selling just the features, you're selling the benefits of the features. Never forget that.
Well, let's talk about debt service forecast here.
Don't you want to take her for a test drive first?
Next slide covers the orphan site debt service forecast in the same format that we looked at the Clean Water SRF. Again, we are projecting an $8 million biennium forecast for these the out biennia all the way out to 2007-09. And as you can see, gradually the debt service continues to rise on the prior bonds that we've issued plus the additional bonds that we forecast. And in this case, it is the 2005-07 biennium at which point the debt service for that biennium will exceed the bond issuance during that biennium. Again, we need to recognize that that debt service is paying for all of the prior bonds that were issued up until that point in time. And
well, I hope we're all term and limited in 07-09.
Well, let's see. Madam Chair, that might not work for some of us.
No. Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just walk me through this just one more time. We're borrowing money to pay our bills. Is that what I'm hearing here?
Representative Hayden, that is correct. We borrow money so that we can, in essence, invest that money in doing cleanups of sites where there is no other funding available to us. And then we essentially pay back that bond over the subsequent 20-year period.
Yeah, I understand that, but can I read this chart to understand that we're just borrowing enough to pay the interest on the bonds that we've already issued?
Representative Hayden, Madam Chair, that is not what this chart is supposed to be communicating to you, and clearly I have not communicated properly what this chart is showing. The green blocks on this chart represent, for past biennia, the actual bonds that we have sold in each of those biennia. So, for example, in the 97-99 biennium, we sold $5 million of orphan site bonds that we used then to pay for orphan site cleanups. In the 99-01 biennium, we sold $8 million. And we project in the four outlying biennia to sell $8 million in each of those biennia as well. As we sell those bonds, however, and continue to add additional bond sales to the pool, that is, our cumulative bond proceeds increase, and let me go back to the prior slide, maybe that will help. In the prior slide, you can see the cumulative orphan site bonds are increasing each biennium on this slide. It perhaps would have been a better presentation to show you the blue part of this chart laid against the prior chart to show you how the debt service continues to increase as the cumulative bonds outstanding go up. That's really what the blue part of this chart is showing you.
Madam Chair. All right. So now I'm understanding that there's really no direct relationship between the green and the blue bars.
Representative
Hayden. You sold this many bonds, you use it to do a service, to clean something up. And on the other hand, you paid $10 million in interest on previous bonds.
Representative Hayden, Madam Chair, that is correct. They are not related, except that we are often asked questions in legislative bodies and by others as to this issue of when the current biennium's debt service equals or exceeds the bond proceeds that we propose to sell during that biennium. We often get questions at that time as to alternative funding sources. The question, why do we use bonds, is often asked. And we present this simply as a piece of information to show that the 05-07 biennium for the orphan site program is where that event, if you will, occurs.
Madam Chair, may I pursue it just another moment?
Yes.
Well, if you sold zero bonds in 07-09, you'd have zero green and $10 million in blue. If you sold $20 million in bonds in 07-09, you'd have a green line that was twice the blue one.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The analogy that makes the most sense to me is to think of this as a household that keeps taking on new credit card debt. It might otherwise be analogous to a mortgage, but for cleanup purposes, although we're building something that the future payers, the taxpayers, will benefit from, we're really paying off something that is not a tangible asset, such as when you build a school or a hospital with bonds. We're paying off last night's dinner, essentially, on a credit card that's accumulating interest. And to follow up on Representative Hayden's line of thinking, and I think the point of showing the cumulative debt relative to the debt payments on it is really what's at issue. You could, in fact, have a zero issuance in 07, 09, but you'd still have that almost $10 million worth of payments because, oh, you don't show this here, you'd have, probably by that point, you'd have $65 million worth of debt on your balance sheet. This shows cash flow. It doesn't show the balance sheet. It doesn't show how much we owe.
Madam Chair, I suspect my director would kick me if she could for not selling the features of the orphan program. And while we've talked considerably about the bonding issues, I think that Representative Nolan, one of the comments that you made just reminded me that this is not just about cleaning up remote sites in remote parts of Oregon. Many of the sites in the orphan program that are cleaned up because there is no owner are put back into productive reuse by the communities. And the biggest example I can give you is the site in Astoria, the plywood mill, whereby it sat dormant for an awful long time. The orphan program went in with just enough seed money so that now it is becoming part of the Astoria community. So I know that Mr. Rocco distributed to you copies of our cleanup book. There are many orphan sites in there. Some of them are cleanups of abandoned mining sites that perhaps people will not be impacted, but many of them are cleanups in small towns across Oregon, nowhere near Portland, that then do become a productive part of the community.
Thank you. We are about out of time, and I think we're out of presentations also.
Madam Chair, that's correct. That does end my presentation.
Okay. Stephanie, did you have anything you wanted to leave us with here?
Madam Chair, I just would like to thank the committee for your attention and your courtesy. I know that we are not the most popular agency in the building, but I felt like we've had some really productive conversations, and I hope that you have benefited from learning a little bit about what we do in some detail, and I appreciate the time to make these presentations to you.
Thank you. Any comments or closing statements from the committee members? Representative Hayden?
I have benefited from the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. I've learned a huge amount. And this, I think, is clearly the most complex budget that the committee's tackled this session. And I just want to express my appreciation for how easy it's been to work with the agency and how responsive you've been in the information that you've brought us in answering our questions and just engaging in the conversation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And with that, we will adjourn the committee. We will not be meeting on Friday, but Mr. Rocco should make some announcements, I think, about what we're going to be doing next week.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On Monday, there will be two grant application requests brought before the committee that we'll need to have a work session done on. One is for watershed restoration funding workshops, and the other is a large request to the Northwest Planning Power Planning Council for some restoration grant money that may be available. And then after that, the committee will start to have public hearings on the Parks and Recreation Department, which will start on Monday after the grant requests are dealt with and continue for the rest of that week.
Thank you. Representative Nova.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rocco, do we have those grant applications, and can we review them now so that we can be prepared for the Monday discussion?
Representative Nolan, we have draft letters from the agencies that I would be glad to share with committee members that would like to look at those.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
Perhaps you could circulate those to our offices.
I could do that, yes.
Thank you.
And having no further business, we will adjourn until Monday.